Well, we're opening our first for the people of 2025 with a number of great chats with some important people in the region talking about critical things like our workforce and workforce development. And an important organization playing a critical role in that is The Workplace, which was originally incorporated as the Private Industry Council of Southern Connecticut back in 1983. Today, The Workplace acts as a convener, a catalyst, a collaborator, and an advocate for workforce development throughout the region, state, and nation. And it has been led for many years by a good friend of mine. Joe Carbone, president and CEO of The Workplace, is on the line with us. Joe, Happy New Year. Good morning, and thanks for joining us.
And the same to you, John, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the successes of 24, but even more important, the objectives of 25.
Yeah, so let's look back at 2024 and The Workplace. If you were to pin two or three of the biggest achievements that you and your team have made, and I don't just mean your team of incredible staff, but the team of so many individuals who have come to The Workplace with low hopes and have left after some support programs, counseling, what have you, on a high note.
Yeah, I think that let me start by saying what an extraordinary time to be in this business, really, especially in our state of Connecticut. Connecticut has a number of structural challenges that are very serious and ultimately may be damaging. But in the meantime, the unemployment rate in Connecticut is the lowest in history. The job growth is the strongest in history. We've got a population problem in the sense that we don't have anywhere near the number of people that we should be having looking for work. We're older than all but seven other states. Population has not increased. And all of that, as much of a structural problem as it may portend, opens the door to huge opportunity for people that already live here. So I think one of the great successes we've had in 24, and it actually started before that, is development of a lot of new opportunities and apprenticeship in helping people to explore opportunities in technology. But in several of the areas where there is clear growth, and let me also mention that when it comes to renewable energy, that's been a major objective of ours. We've created programs that will move people into occupations that are future-oriented, not the past. And why is that important? Because there will be a shortage of skilled workers in Connecticut for at least a decade to come. And therefore, we've got to develop skills that are appropriate, that are in need, and that are consistent with the economic trends of our region. So I think that has been one of our great successes that we've had in 24. I think a process that began earlier kind of came to fruition in the sense that we've got a whole variety of new programs, and each one of them is directly attached to one of the growth items in the economy of our region of Connecticut.
Well, what it's been great to see is where so many people over the past decade or more have kind of feared losing their job when they're in their late 40s, mid 50s, early 60s, and they still have many productive years to go. You folks are running a program called Maturity Works that is making a huge difference in pipelining these very viable, talented, passionate, dedicated workforce members back into new jobs.
And, you know, actually, it's kind of interesting, but you would think at a time during worker shortage that anybody that comes forward, regardless of age, that has skills and, you know, certainly a prior working history, that person would be in great demand. Many years ago, we created a program called Platform to Employment. it is still the number one program in this nation when it comes to reemployment, you know, effort. Mm-hmm. We find that every time I do a class, and we have classes running all the time in Platform to Employment, every time you do, if you just notice the common age of the group, something happens when you're approaching 50 or you hit 50 or a little bit older. It somehow kind of camouflages everything else that you would normally see happening in that situation. And there is a clear discrimination. This program, Platform to Employment, has got all the components to help a person to get beyond that and even taking any risk out, because there is a common thinking out there among employers that if you're over 50, you're going to be focusing on the pension, you're going to be focusing on medical benefits, you may be less connected to technology, and they just sort of start off the process by believing that the younger you are, you know, the more able I'm going to be to have a workforce for the future. Maturity works, keeps the mind active. It basically provides, and by the way, this is a national program, and we run the program in most of New York City, in Philadelphia, and some of the suburbs of Philly, all of Connecticut, all of Rhode Island, and in Vermont. So we're running that program. I have 800 people a day on the payroll, and they're doing community service as well. It's keeping a large group of people so that when the right opportunity springs up, that they're better able to assume duties and to compete for work in that sector. And it works. And not only are they getting jobs, but they're getting jobs at reasonably good wages. And just to get back to Platform to Employment for a second, the average wage of people that are coming through the program in 2024 was about $60,000 a year, which doesn't mean you're rich in southwestern Connecticut or anywhere in Connecticut with that, but it's not bad. It's not minimum wage. It's not anything of that sort. So the programs, the more we can bring reasonably good qualified candidates to employers, the more the wages grow, and the more that I think we help employers to get beyond this, you know, suspicion that somehow if you're 50 or more that you're a potential liability. You are not. And if you've got skills that are relevant to need, you're in great demand, and the supply is short. So employers need to take a serious look at that. Mm.
I also see that on the opposite end of the age spectrum, the Platform to Employment initiative has expanded downward into the youth market, as you and I have talked about so many times over so many years. It's exposing them, young people, at the earliest possible opportunity to ways that they can productively contribute, not just to their own financial resiliency, but to their families and their communities. It sounds like the Platform to Employment for Youth is a fantastic opportunity.
You know, just a couple of months ago, the Dalio Foundation in Connecticut released a report. It's called 119K, and it cites what they're calling disconnected youth. And youth today is really, you're up to the age of around 25 under the federal standards, so you can be a little bit older and still be considered youth. And they showed 119,000 that were disconnected, not directly involved in the economy at this point. But among that group, there is 41,000 who have gone to high school, who graduated from high school, but they were either officially unemployed or significantly underemployed. So here's the case. You've got a sustained period of worker shortage with a backdrop of economic growth. You got 40,000 plus young people who did graduate from high school and are unemployed or underemployed. It seems to me that is a huge asset to Connecticut, because the economy needs workers. They're young. They're probably tech savvy. And they're not working. So in spite of all the other barriers that you might have to grow the workforce in Connecticut, that here's a case in which you start with 40,000. So what I did is I went to the General Assembly last session, and I don't know what they're going to do with the Dahlia report in the future, but I wanted to try a platform to employment for youth. We just completed the first cohort, and we'll do four more by June 30. But the first cohort, a cohort of, I believe it was 14, and we have about a dozen already employed. And John, if you can see these young people for the orientation day, the first day of class, when they're feeling almost no self-confidence, very difficult for them to kind of express themselves, more a sense that they just didn't think highly enough of themselves to kind of seize the moment. And then you saw them at graduation about 5-6 weeks later. And then they can go out into the market, and we can actually pay them for a period of 6 weeks and give an employer a chance to give them a test to see whether or not they're up to what is required by that employer. That's happening. I am very confident. When I tell you that, I mean, I admire the Dalio family for having the courage to issue that report. And I think it's a clear signal to Connecticut. Take advantage of this group, especially these 40,000 plus who already have a high school diploma. I mean, we're not growing population in Connecticut, and I think a couple of times we grew it by just a fraction. But we got a housing crisis in our state.
Yes.
I mean, when it comes to affordable housing, we are probably 200,000 units short. Mm. So if we're not going to be importing people, ultimately economic growth can challenge us in a way that can be harmful. And here you got 40,000 young people that are not functioning at their full potential. And platform to employment prepares them for that opportunity. So I am looking to the next session, which begins in a few weeks. When I say the next session, I'm talking about the General Assembly in our state. And I want this to be part of what they do when it comes to the Dalio Foundation report. And it's my hope that they will respond to it. But P2E is one of what will be, I think, many solutions. But every time you bring someone who's young like that into the economy, and you think future, it's not just a good moral question to do that. It is good for the state to do it. I mean, this is the interesting part of this. I think most employers feel this sense of obligation that we've got to do some good for the people, especially the disadvantaged in our region. And that's wonderful. But when it becomes a self-interest, when they have to build a workforce for the future, we have never seen a situation like that before. Mm-hmm. And this is a time where we need to excite the various groups in our population who are not enjoying this great economy to get with it and have programs in mind and available for them so that they can compete in that environment.
Well, in the last 3 or 4 minutes we have with you, Joe, let's also look to 2025, look inward. What are some of the headlines you hope the workplace will be making in the new year?
We are going to obviously expand our programs, especially for youth, now that we're beginning to get the kind of test results, which are very, very positive. I started a year or so ago, and I'm certainly going to be accelerating our involvement in the Connecticut housing shortage problem, affordable housing or workforce housing, you can call it what you want, but we are a couple hundred units short, and that is causing folks to leave Connecticut that need to remain here. That's causing folks from other states to not come here. And that needs to change. Mm. There is a connection between workforce opportunity and the availability of affordable housing. You can see the workplace will be very much involved in it. But another major issue is artificial intelligence. You almost can't read a publication, not just in our region, but on a national level, where AI is not taking a major role. When technology became revolutionary a number of years ago, I think the American workforce system was probably years behind it before it took full value. We need to make sure that that's not the case again. Artificial intelligence is moving rapidly through almost every sector of our economy, not just in our region, but statewide. We need to be sure that when people come to the American job centers or people come to the workplace and all of our programs are kept up to date in the best way that we can so that people, through their experience, get a flavor of AI. We need to take advantage of the moment that we have. And no one needs to be, no one can't be left out. This has got to be an effort that affects everybody that comes through our door. And we've got to feel a sense that we're giving them a chance to know AI and that there are some elements of AI that is that are built into our programs so that people are always conscious of the need for their continuous education, lifelong learning, but how AI might affect their occupations, and it will affect it. That's a major thing you're going to be hearing from us. And, you know, frankly, given the depth and breadth of artificial intelligence, if we're successful with that, it will reap, I think, benefits for decades to come.
Well, it's fantastic to hear that you're turning your attention toward housing as a critical component of workforce development, because frankly, you know, we're kind of hearing the whispers across the universe of major corporations and investors in workforce that may be poised to relocate or locate or grow a business here in Connecticut or elsewhere, that if they may not come to Connecticut if they don't think that their workforce is going to have a good place to live. And they're not going to grow in Connecticut if their workforce is already challenged to find a good place to live. Mm-hmm. And they're not experiencing that turnover of people who, you know, find a similar paying job closer to home, if you will, or who have relocated themselves to just find work that is sustainable. So a fantastic goal. And the AI component also very astute. Everybody can use it. And there are many ways it can play a role in enhancing and improving and sustaining Connecticut's workforce. So as I always say, Joe, kudos to you and your team at the workplace. The motto, think it forward, could not suit you all better. And I was glad to see that when you added that to the workplace branding. And so great to hear about your expansion and how you're representing Connecticut and so many other states and cities and bringing all the great work that you do to them. I wish you the best in 2025. Joe Carbone, President and CEO of The Workplace here in Connecticut, conducting comprehensive planning and coordinating regional and statewide workforce development programs to prepare people for careers while strengthening the workforce for employers. Joe, thank you so much for your time this
morning.
Thank
you, John. Thank you so much.
Well, folks who listen to the program know I do somewhere in the neighborhood of 150 different interviews every year. And I have to say that this one at the midpoint of our first program of the new year is one I look so forward to. And that's my conversation with my buddy John Sullivan up in the northwestern corner of Connecticut. He's representing the Salisbury Winter Sports Association. And we're going to jump right into a conversation about the 99th annual Salisbury Jump Fest. If you have never experienced the incredible energy of ski jumping live, you've really never witnessed sports. You can be there, bring your cowbells, cheer on the jumpers, and watch them as they soar up to 200 feet through the air at speeds up to 50 miles an hour. It's really something you must experience, and we're going to tell you how you can experience it. We'll be back with John Sullivan right after this important message going out to all Connecticut teens. Hey, you've only got until January 31st to participate in the Connecticut Department of Motor Vehicles and Travelers 15th Annual Teen Safe Driving Video Contest. This contest is open to all public, private, and homeschooled high school students in Connecticut between the ages of 14 to 18, and it requires students to produce a creative, unique, and effective video public service announcement up to 45 seconds in length that highlights interactions between drivers and other teens and illustrates ways to practice safer driving habits while obeying Connecticut's teen driving laws. The videos must also address at least one specific Connecticut teen driving law, so get to work. If you want to learn more or read the full contest rules and information, just go to ct.gov/teendriving/contest. All right. Well, that's not the only contest that's going to be happening on the last or coming to an end in the last weekend of January and the first week, first few days of February, I should say. John Sullivan, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us again.
Well, thank you very much, John. I appreciate it. Happy New Year.
So when we last talked, the excitement was building over a program to raise funds and plans for reconfiguration or reconstruction of some of the ski jump facilities up there in the northwestern corner in Salisbury, Connecticut. Let's start the conversation talking about where that project stands.
Sure, absolutely. Well, we're very excited. We have three jumps, basically. We have a 20-meter jump, and then we had a 30-meter jump, and we have the big Olympic-sized 70-meter jump. The 30-meter jump is an important step from the small jump to the bigger jump for children who are learning how to jump. And it was 75 years old, wooden, falling apart. So that we've raised over $500,000 already just from local residents and businesses to reconstruct it, and it's been torn down. We put in night lights so we can ski at night, jump at night, and they are going to be they're in the process of doing excavation, and they'll be building the jump this winter and spring, so that can be used actually 12 months out of the year, because we'll be able to ski jump even in the summertime, if you can believe that.
So how does
so
that
we're excited.
Work? What do mechanics and wonders of magic over nature do you apply to be?
Well, there's two different ways. I don't know if they've decided which method to use yet. But if you could look at the Lake Placid site and you'll see how they do it. But they have it looks like grass, but it's the material is very slippery, and they literally. It's exactly the same as being on snow, and they land on it as well. Mm. So that's one way. The other method is they put plastic down, and then they have water coming down the plastic on the tower and the outrun. And so I'm not sure which method they're going to use yet, but either way, it'll be fun to be able to for the kids to practice in the summer and have competitions where, you know, the public can go and watch.
Yeah. And boy, has the sport changed in the 99 plus years that this has been going on up in Salisbury, Connecticut. A really easy destination for folks to get to no matter where they're listening, including all our friends out on Long Island. Take the ferry across and head up Route 8 all the way to the end, and then kind of you'll hang a right-hand turn heading towards the northwestern corner. Also, great information available for you at jumpfest.org if you want to get all the details, ticket prices. It's a weekend full of family-friendly activities that starts actually on Friday, January 31st. So, John, let's hear all about the festival and what's being offered here in year 99.
Sure. Well, like you said, it starts out Friday night with target jumping, and all of these ski jumpers from the region participate, and they're basically jumping to hit a target at the bottom of the jump, and whoever gets the closest wins the cash prize, and I'm not sure how much that'll be this year. But it's not a ton of money, but I think it's been $500, which to a 17-year-old is a lot of money.
Sure.
So that's a lot of fun. It's under the lights. It's dark out. We've got food trucks. We've got, you know, hot toddy and beer and wine tents. We've got bonfires, and people bring their cowbells, or you can buy them there, and they cheer on the jumpers. And then we have this crazy thing called the human dog sled race after the jumps are done, and that is teams of, oh my gosh, I think it's teams of six people. You've got a driver, and you've got five runners, and they make their own crazy looking sled, and they go all the way down to the base of the jump and then back, which is quite far, towing somebody on a sled. And they dress up, you know, we've had people dressed up like Vikings and sleds shaped like ambulances and police cars. It's a lot of fun.
So people are hearing about this as this show broadcasts on the air on the 5th of January. At that point, if people hear about this and want to get involved, is it too late for that?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, they can join up right up until a few days before. But they go to the website. The instructions are all there at jumpfest.org.
Excellent.
Absolutely. With the more teams, the better.
And then come Saturday, February 1st, it's all day and into the night.
Well, Saturday, no, not night, but Saturday is the Salisbury Invitational, and those jumps start, practice starts with the small jumps. This year it'll be the one small jump and the younger kids around 9 a.m., but then the big jumps, they start practicing around 11, and the competition starts around 12. It goes on until about 3:30, because at that point it's getting a little dark, so some people make the mistake of, like, getting there at 2:30, and it's, you know, they don't have a whole lot of time.
Yeah.
So really, there's something going on between 9 and 3:30. Saturday.
And I should have said Jump Fest activities continue into the night, because that's when the party.
Oh yes, I'm sorry.
The party starts at about 8, right?
Exactly, and of course I should have thought of that. I'm the guy in charge of that particular event. It's called the Snowball. It's a live music event down at the Lakeville Town Grove. It's a lot of fun. We have a band, Steve Dunn Band, playing for the third year in a row. They're fantastic. And there is a cash bar with beer, wine, and soda. We give away free pizza at 10 o'clock. And then we have a huge raffle with everything from, you know, restaurant gift certificates to front row seats at the New York Rangers in New York at Madison Square Garden. So it's a fun night.
Excellent. And then things start wrapping up fairly early on Sunday, February 2nd?
Well, Sunday is the Eastern U.S. Ski Jumping Championships, which is a big deal because the winners of that get put onto the national team, which gives them the opportunity to become an Olympian. And then, of course, the junior nationals, which includes them and other top finishers around the region, compete every 5 years. They come to Lake Salisbury every 5 years. I think we had them 2 years ago. So the next junior nationals will be in 2028.
And in regards to that, people who come to this event either for the first time this year in year 99 or you know, going way back into its history, have had numerous chances to see young jumpers who have gone on to become world champions.
Absolutely. Pretty much every ski jumper that's been on the U.S. Olympic team has come through Salisbury and competed here, including many people from other countries. You might remember Eddie the Eagle from England. He's been here many times, and there's a movie about him that he emceed a couple of years ago. So it's exciting. You see a lot of great talent.
Well, let's shift gears and talk a little bit more about the sports for folks who may be planning to now come and visit you up in Salisbury. Let's hear a little more about the actual sport of ski jumping. As I kind of alluded to earlier, it's probably changed a little bit in terms of the the surrounding equipment and facilities over the 99 years this event's been happening, but it also is steeped in tradition.
Yeah, absolutely. The original people who started this jump 99 years ago were from Norway, and they had immigrated here to Salisbury, Connecticut, and they started off skiing off the roof of a barn in town, and then they decided they were going to build a jump, and they built a jump on the mountain next door, and it was wood, of course, and then it grew from there because there was a big population of Scandinavian immigrants here, and they all ski jumping over there is just, you know, like walking. Mm. Everybody does it. So that is where it started, and it's just grown since then. And about 15 years ago, we replaced the big jump with a metal jump, which was a big step. And to see these young, I mean, everybody jumping this weekend or that weekend, this coming weekend, is 18 years of age or younger. And we have a jump camp here between Christmas and New Year's, where this year we had a record number of over 50 children ages 5 to 12 learning how to jump off the 20 meter jump, which is amazing because a bunch of those kids will end up being, going on and doing much more with this sport. And we also have our own team in Salisbury that competes with other jumps around New England.
Oh, okay. So we mentioned at the top of the show that development is nearing completion for what you said, the middle sized jump. Obviously, the big metal one is in place and fully operational, and that's where the probably some of the most exciting flight happens. But what are the necessity for the other two?
Well, the 20 meter is obviously the smallest and the first jump that the kids learn on, and then they. Ideally, they transition up to what was a 30 meter. The new one that we're putting in is a 36 meter, so it's a little bit bigger than the one we had. Mm-hmm. It's going to be state of the art, and we still have a long way to go building it. So far, they've just done, the excavation. They're in the process of excavating it, and they put lights in because we're going to be jumping there under the lights. But they still have to construct the jump itself and then do more excavation on the outrun. But ideally next winter, it'll be all done and the kids can transition from the 20 to the 30. And if they want to continue on, then they go up to the 70 meter. And I don't know what percentage of kids end up doing that, but it's a pretty good number and it's a pretty big step. But it's important to have the transition from 20 to 30 to 70.
Yeah, and to some extent, these are created to a kind of a global standard so that the people who... the young people who learn on the 20 and then advance eventually to the 36 and perhaps on up to the 65 or 70, wherever they go, there'll be some familiarity, right?
Oh, totally, absolutely, and our kids have jumped in multiple locations like Lake Placid and Brattleboro and New Hampshire, so. The 20 meter is a 20 meter, whether it be here or there. All the dimensions and all of the angles have to be exact, and we hire a professional architect that does the ski jump design, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sure.
Yeah.
They're out there.
Yeah.
So in closing, in the last minute or so that we have with you, John, this is sort of your marquee event for the Salisbury Winter Sports Association, but this is not the only thing the association is involved with.
No, not at all. We have, the kids jump there frequently throughout the winter. They have their own little meets. But in addition to ski jumping, that location on Indian Cave Road in Salisbury, Connecticut, we have concerts there. We have beer festivals. We have a lot of events that are all fundraisers, either for Salisbury Winter Sports or for other nonprofit groups. By the way, we are a 501c3 nonprofit, and all of our profits go to local elementary and middle schools to promote winter sports in the school system to get kids out and active in the winter. So there's a lot, you know, we have a golf tournament, not there, but elsewhere and nearby, and there's always something going on.
That's fantastic. Well, I hope people who are listening to the program and subsequently to the podcast will pencil in the weekend of January 31st through February 2nd and consider heading out to the 99th annual Salisbury Ski Jump Fest. You'll see future Olympians and maybe even get your office, neighborhood, social group, or friends together and register for that human dog sled race on Friday, January 31st. It's all really easy to get to, and it's a beautiful location up in the northwestern hills of Connecticut. Everything you need to know is at jumpfest.org, and everything I need to know, I've learned from my guest, John Sullivan. Of this organization, this winter sports group. So, John, once again, thank you. Best of luck this year, and happy jumping. So maybe 2025 is the year that you've resolved to break away from the everyday and show your best entrepreneurial spirit by starting your own business, or perhaps taking a home-based business to brick-and-mortar storefront, or enhancing or expanding your business or workforce. Well, you need to know that there are some spectacular mentors out there waiting to help you with the backing of a nationwide organization that is also offering tons of resources, and it all starts with SCORE. And I'm so pleased to welcome back to the program Will Meikle. He is the Connecticut Assistant District Director and Northeast Regional Director for SCORE. And we're going to pass on as much information as we can squeeze into about 15 minutes with Will. Right after we remind you about this, for our parents and caregivers out there, according to Connecticut Department of Public Health Commissioner Dr. Manisha Jathani, Connecticut school immunization rates are rebounding, but it's still important for parents to check with their child's health care provider to ensure that all vaccinations are up to date. High vaccination rates protect not only vaccinated children, but also those who cannot or have not been vaccinated. This is called herd immunity. Maybe you've heard of it. Schools that achieve this immunity reduce the risk of outbreaks. High vaccination rates at schools are especially important for medically fragile children. If you'd like to learn how to get you or your child's vaccine records securely online, you can go to ct.gov/getmyvaccinerecord. It's that simple. All right. Talk about simple. You want to get the most simple distance between the business that you have now or a dream of it to success will likely involve a trip through a regional SCORE chapter or interactions with a SCORE mentor or volunteer. Will Meikle, welcome back to the program. So glad to hear your voice here in this first program of 2025.
Well, John, thank you very much for having me back again. This was a delight to do last year, and I'm delighted to be back. And I happy New Year to you and to all your listeners.
Yes, and when last we spoke, you were also the chair of the Western Connecticut chapter of SCORE. That position has been filled with a new individual, and now you're turning your attention really towards statewide and regional-wide initiatives. Tell folks the boilerplate of what they need to know about what SCORE is.
Sure. Thank you, John. Well, I like to characterize this SCORE as one of the most hidden jewels that exists across this country. For those of you who are not familiar with us, SCORE is the nation's largest nonprofit organization that's in place to help aspiring entrepreneurs and small business owners. We do this through one-on-one business mentoring and educational services that are offered through both in-person workshops and online recorded webinars. It is a network of over 10,000 volunteers across the country, spanning all industries, and people who are giving of their time working as well as retired individuals. And probably the most important thing to know, John, is that everything that we do is free and confidential expert business advice. It is non-limited by how many times you can come. You can be with us for a long journey throughout your business cycle. So we're here to help, and we have a full set of services that are we want to make available and make more people aware of.
Yeah, and we're amidst a big anniversary year for SCORE, and in the many years since it was formed in 1964, 11 million aspiring entrepreneurs and small business owners have been mentored or assisted with educational services across the 50 states. I know in your time here in Connecticut, you have seen hundreds and hundreds of them pass through your regional organization. Let's talk a little bit more about the ways that folks can begin their SCORE journey. It's as simple as going to the website, right?
It really is the simplest way. If you go to our website, which is www.score.org, you'll see a full set of our services, including our mentoring and educational services. And it's as simple as going on, doing a quick lookup or requesting a mentor. And within a matter of answering just simple four or five questions, we will be back to you within two business days, and we'll hook you up with a mentor and get you on your way.
And in so many cases, not just a mentor, but there's good potential that that mentor may have had some experience in the type of business or effort that the caller is trying to either begin or fortify, or perhaps they'll really hit the jackpot and get a mentor who has walked in the shoes they hope to in their business future.
Oh, that's absolutely right, John. Our volunteers have come from a wide range of backgrounds, both in terms of small business ownership as well as corporate business experience. And as part of our process of matching a client to a mentor, we try to find someone who's best suited to align to their question of where they want help. If they're looking for general help, it doesn't matter. We'll sign them someone who's available and can get to them quickly. But if they're in a very targeted, specialized space or a specialized question, we will do our best to match them up precisely with someone who will, as you say, hit the jackpot.
Mm. Now, when this whole SCORE ride started, it really more stood for Service Corps of Retired Executives. But these days, many, many individuals come to SCORE to share their passion, their knowledge, and their support for fledgling business people and entrepreneurs, which is really, really important because, you know, there's a lot going on amongst the peer group of the 20-somethings to 50-somethings in terms of AI, in terms of other technologies, in terms of business cultures and practices and things. Your mentor bench, if you will, really can reflect the entire sort of span of business people in terms of age and the types of businesses they want to either get involved with or enhance.
Absolutely. We've seen this change over time. I've been with SCORE now for almost 5 years, and it's really started to change a lot, even just in that short amount of time. But you're absolutely right. We were predominantly, when formed, a retired executive organization, but now it's much, much more balanced. We have a lot of people who are giving back while still working full time, and from all industries and all backgrounds. And one of the best things that they bring to the table, people who are a little younger on the scale, as they say, than I may be, is a little bit more contemporary skills in some of those hot emerging areas around social media, artificial intelligence, and the use of technology to leverage in their business.
And the entrepreneurs who come to SCORE are seeing mentors that look like them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're very much trying to have our mentor profiles look an awful lot like the clients we support, which, you know, interestingly enough, about 65% of our clients are women, 46% are minorities, and 13% are disabled individuals, and 9% are veterans. And if you looked at our volunteer profile, it's similar, and that's not identically matched up, but it's much more balanced in that manner, which I think is important from creating an inclusive environment where people feel comfortable.
Yeah, and while Connecticut is a relatively small state, it still has business idiosyncrasies depending on where you live. And that's why it's so important for SCORE chapters to be segmented into regions of the state of Connecticut where they can really serve everyone best.
Yeah, that's right. We are organized here in Connecticut into six geographical chapters, and we've done that so that we can create a closeness to the small business owners if they would like to meet in person as opposed to virtual meetings, that would allow that. And it also creates a sense of community for our volunteers, for anyone who's interested in joining us in a volunteer capacity. But the other thing that's been great, particularly a great outcome coming out of COVID, if there were great outcomes, was that we now have full access to the 10,000 volunteers across the country, because everyone's much more comfortable with virtual meetings. And if you have a really expertise area that you want somebody in, we don't have it locally, we can search through our network of 10,000 volunteers and find someone specifically designed to help you with your question and journey.
Yeah, and I'm seeing right here in Connecticut, if you were to sort of break down the numbers, each one of your 300 volunteers statistically has helped at least two new businesses start in Connecticut that have created over 1,000 new jobs. So SCORE isn't just a coaching and educational entity. It is a workforce multiplier.
Yeah, absolutely. And those statistics you just quoted were all around new businesses formed. And we do help existing businesses take their business to the next level and move it forward. So just to complement what you said there, we supported over 2,300 clients here in Connecticut this past year through mentoring services. We delivered 10,000 workshop attendees to our local workshops. And we had another 4,000 people across the state participate in national webinars on a whole host of topics and varieties of information that they were interested in. So over 16,000 people were impacted through our education and mentoring services this past year.
Yeah, and we don't want to burn too much time and not be able to sort of detail to people a little bit of the catalog of upcoming educational events and activities you're doing. That starts with a five-week in-person program that's happening across the state on starting a business.
Yeah, our flagship offering that we have hosted for many years now is a program called Simple Steps to Starting Your Business. As you stated, it's a five-week program in person that takes people through the whole journey of starting a business, from business concept idea through marketing, through financial management, through how to get the business registered properly off the ground. So that is a great program, and it will be done in various locations across the state at various points throughout the upcoming year. Mm-hmm. And if you go to our website, you can get on that. And you can also register for our newsletter, which will keep you up to date on all our offerings. But we have many, many more things coming as well.
Yeah, in just a few days, on January 9th, using Google Analytics to improve website traffic. And another really, really important one, mastering artificial intelligence to accelerate your marketing, coming up on January 14th. You've got a couple other really important workshops happening before the end of the month. Will, let's hear about them.
Yeah, the other two that really strike home with many small businesses, particularly if you're trying to get one off the ground, is 2025's Hottest Business Ideas and Trends, of what's going on in the industry. That is a program that will be kicked off on January 28th in a webinar format. And the other one, for every business, I'm a financial person by background, and central to that is making sure that you manage your financial aspects of your business. And so there's a program called QuickBooks for Small Businesses on January 23rd, which will help create the foundation for any business out there to make sure they have good financial management practices across their business.
Great. Well, in closing, Will, let's hear your version of the pitch that I tried to sum up in the introduction, not only for people who are looking to get engaged and educated through SCORE to benefit their own business or startup, but also opportunities for those who want to see individuals succeed as SCORE volunteers.
Yeah, very good. Thank you, John. And thank you to your audience for listening today. Look, if you are wanting to start your own business, SCORE is your best source for free, confidential, small business advice that will really help you build your business from the idea stage to startup all the way through to success. The best way to do that is to visit us at www.score.org to find a mentor or become aware of our educational services, and we will get a SCORE mentor working with you to help you with the start of your business and take you to existing businesses to new heights. If you are interested also in joining our team of volunteers to share your expertise, you can also find information about that on our website as well. We're here for you, and as we like to say, our success in SCORE is your success as a small business. So reach out and ask us for help, and we'll be gladly there to help you along the way.
From business planning and financial forecasting through sales and marketing, social media, digital marketing, technology, cybersecurity, accounting, financial management, company organization, legal structures, governmental registration and regulation strategy, and hey, even for you folks that are thinking you might want to start a franchise, it's all there for SCORE. And as you heard from our guest this morning, Will Meikle, Connecticut Assistant District Director and Northeast Regional Director for SCORE, it all starts at score.org. We wish you luck, Will, this year in your leadership capacity with SCORE, and congratulate all the folks who are going to step out and step up to improve their business or start their new business in 2025, hopefully with their first call to SCORE. Thanks so much, call to SCORE. Thanks so much. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA for our program that's relevant to the audiences and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program can be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station websites. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Vocat. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime. Just find it under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
Most people don't know how many financial accounts they have or their net worth. And when you're not paying attention, you're leaving money on the table. The solution is Monarch, an all-in-one personal finance tool that brings your entire financial life together in one clean interface on your laptop or phone. In just minutes, link all your accounts for a complete picture of your financial health. You'll never need a spreadsheet again. Get 50% off your first year at monarch.com with code WEALTH. That's monarch.com, promo code WEALTH.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.